Hello and welcome to Resurrected Reviews Revisited, part of the Will You Still Love It Tomorrow podcast. I'm Annie, and in each reviews episode I pick something I've reviewed sometime since 2005, reread or rewatch it, and then compare my reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers. This month, my pick is The Watchmaker of Filigree Street by Natasha Pulley. It was published in 2015 and tells the story of Thaniel Steepleton in 1883, who returns home to his tiny London apartment to find a gold watch on his pillow. 6 months later, the mysterious timepiece saves his life, drawing him away from a blast that destroys Scotland Yard. At last, he goes in search of its maker, Cater Mori, a kind, lonely immigrant from Japan. Although Mori seems harmless, a chain of unexplainable events soon suggests he must be hiding something. When Grace Carrow, an Oxford physicist, unwittingly interferes, Thaniel is torn between opposing loyalties. Before revisiting it, my recollections of my original experience of encountering this book are as follows. I went to a literary event some years ago, maybe 2017, which was a Q&A with Natasha Pulley and Samantha Shannon. I hadn't come across either of them before, but purchased books by both of them after the event, and that's how I ended up listening to The Watchmaker of Filigree Street. I remember enjoying it, but very little else. I do know there's a sequel I haven't read, which is why I put this book on the list to revisit. Here's what I thought on listening to it again this year. It's a pretty short book, and the opening is very quiet and unassuming, so I'm a bit concerned I won't have anything to say. I like the protagonist Thaniel immediately, purely because he keeps tea in his drawer at work. It's also interesting that he has synesthesia, as that doesn't come up in books very often. But the first few pages of the book are just him filling time during his shift by making tea and thinking about how bored he is at the telegraph office, so not exactly a dynamic start to a book. Even when the news of the bomb threat comes through from Scotland Yard, it's not due to happen for 6 months, so there isn't any immediate urgency to it. Then, when Thaniel gets home, it seems someone has broken into his flat. Excitement? Threat? No. The intruder has done the washing up and made a pot of tea. It is intriguing, though, more so when he discovers the box with the broken pocket watch inside. But then, weeks go by with no developments, and it all feels very leisurely and low stakes, but not in a bad way. Is this perhaps cosy fantasy before cosy fantasy was officially a thing? Thaniel is also not your typical fantasy hero. He gives off a sort of bumbling sweetness, but turns out to be the unofficial head of his department and a good support to the other clerks who are stressed about the bomb threats. There's a great description of him. He was older, but even if they had all been the same age, he would still have been older. There's a brief flurry of action when the news of the bomb at Victoria Station comes through, but it doesn't affect Thaniel directly and the story soon moves on. Then we get more gentle mystery when Thaniel tries to sell the watch and the pawnbroker refuses to take any of his work because he's heard stories that the watches disappear if pawned. Daniel's own apprehension about the upcoming bomb threats is brilliantly conveyed by him looking at butter and cheese in the shops and calculating if they might conceivably outlive him. Then we switch to a completely different place and viewpoint, Grace in her final year at Oxford, disguised as a boy in order to gain access to the Bodleian. I love her instantly and I'm always glad to spend time in Oxford when reading. I love Grace's irreverent attitude to Oxford University rules and her dismissal of non-scientific subjects of study. There is plenty of 1880s misogyny and racism, but not from the author of Grace, at least at this stage. And thus far, the connection between the two storylines seems to be that both Thaniel and Grace own pocket watches made by the mysterious titular character, Kay Mori. Then we're back with Thaniel on the day of the threatened bombings, but everything is relaxed enough for funny banter about telegraphy acronyms. B.O. Bugger off, usually to the Foreign Office. Is it just me, or do I detect a frisson of flirtation between Thaniel and Williamson at Scotland Yard in their telegraphic exchanges? The 6 month lead time for the bomb threats is the first sense of threat we get in the book, but that time has basically been almost entirely skipped over, and even on the day there's very little build up of tension before the deadline passes, and nothing happens. And then there's a massive explosion at Scotland Yard that pretty much destroys the pub over the road where Thaniel, Williamson and the other clerks have gone to celebrate. But Thaniel is saved by an alarm from the watch, which makes him go out the back just in time. The description of the aftermath and Thaniel imagining what would have happened to him if he'd still been inside are quite graphic. But again, it's all over very quickly and none of the characters we've grown to know are particularly affected. I think the sense of calm and lack of tension are also increased by the soothing tone of the audiobook narrator, who has a lovely voice, which is well suited to Thaniel as a character, but not perhaps to the more exciting parts of the story. When Thaniel goes to the watchmaker's shop and confronts him about the alarm going off just before the bomb, Maury has a plausible explanation for everything. But he also appears from the back room, a few seconds after Thaniel's supposedly unexpected arrival, with two cups of green tea. In Thaniel's viewpoint, Maury is referred to as the little foreigner, and it says he expected the decor in Maury's rooms to include opium pipes and silk drapes, and he's surprised that everything is English, so that's not especially great. Maury makes an interesting first impression. He's quiet and unassuming and apparently very kind, but has deep wisdom and hidden sorrows. Then we jump 13 years into the past, into Japan, but we get the viewpoint of a government official named Ito rather than Maury himself. What we discover is that Maury was mistreated by his older cousin as a young man, and he almost definitely has some kind of weird power over seemingly random events, since a wall collapses and kills his cousin just when Maury has the opportunity to leave and go to America. He also seems to know a certain amount about the future, since he's aware he needs to be in London 10 years later to meet Thaniel. It's all very intriguing, but still in a quiet, unassuming way, much like Maury himself. When Thaniel is assigned by Superintendent Williamson to keep an eye on Maury, I would actually rather the plot stayed formless and unexciting, because I'm not generally a fan of stories where the protagonist has to betray the trust of someone they've just become friends with. I'm assuming Maury doesn't actually have anything to do with the bombs, or at least I really hope so, but I also don't want him to be upset when he discovers Thaniel is spying on him because he's under suspicion from Scotland Yard. By the time we get back to Grace in Oxford, I'd forgotten she was in the story at all because there are so many Thaniel chapters in between. We get the usual Victorian story of a parent pressuring a young woman to marry, though at least it's to do with a legal arrangement pertaining to Grace's inheritance of her aunt's house, and her mother would actually be fully in favour of Grace being able to have the house without getting married. There's also some weirdness with Grace's Maury watch disappearing and then reappearing, having apparently been serviced in the meantime, but that remains the only connection between the narratives. Grace's chapter is also very short, and then we're back in London with Thaniel again, which is a shame because I'd like to spend more time with her. The book actually grants this wish in the second half, but it doesn't turn out how I'd hoped. The fantastical elements, which have only really been hints and implications before, come into focus more when Thaniel searches Maury's room and discovers a diary that has entries written about the future as well as the past. Maury's general air of sadness is more poignant if you consider he has likely known all along that Thaniel is spying on him for both Scotland Yard and the Foreign Office. Everything finally converges when most of the characters attend the Foreign Office ball. And it's interesting that when Grace and Thaniel finally meet, we're in Grace's viewpoint, even though Thaniel has had most of the book up to that point. The explanation when it comes is that Maury can see likely possibilities of what might happen, which get narrower as each moment approaches the present. Things do start moving faster after that point, with Thaniel telling Grace about Maury's supposed ability the very next day, less than 24 hours after they've met. They hatch a plan to test if Maury is telling the truth, though I have to admit I don't quite understand why Grace thinks putting an extra ace into a pack of cards and then challenging Maury to play will demonstrate whether or not he can see the future. But it works. Grace also establishes that Maury's abilities with clockwork far exceed what is generally achievable through examining his mischievous clockwork octopus, Katsu. I'm well into the book now, and I still have no idea what the main focus of the plot is. Yes, there have been bombings across London and threats of more, but that seems almost incidental to the story. Thaniel is supposed to be investigating Maury in connection with the bombings, but I'm almost 100% certain Maury doesn't have anything to do with them. I mean, he makes cupcakes with icing in a particular colour sequence just because Thaniel tells him the pattern is what Greensleeves looks like to him because of his synesthesia. So, what is this book even about? There's a certain amount about Irish and Japanese nationalist unrest, but again, it's fairly incidental and only crops up now and then. After the story being so slow, things between Thaniel and Grace move very quickly. Within 48 hours of meeting, Thaniel tells Grace all about the Scotland Yard's suspicions of Maury and his involvement in the investigation, and Grace asks Thaniel to marry her so he can have money to support his sister and she can continue her scientific career with a sympathetic husband. It doesn't seem to occur to either of them that Maury sent the watch with the alarm to save Thaniel's life simply because he knew about the bomb from his ability, which turns out to be the case, but then Maury doesn't offer that explanation either, even after Thaniel knows about the ability. I'm living to be sorry that Grace is getting more page time, because I actually like her less the more time we spend in her head. She's quite brusque and not very charitable in the way she thinks about people. Case in point. When she comes to the initial conclusion that clairvoyance isn't possible, she thinks, "He's a fraud! Thaniel is living with a bomb maker who can do card tricks. Magnificent!" She's also very mean to her maid. Maury's resignation about everything is very sad, and also indicative that knowing what's likely to happen isn't necessarily all that helpful. Then there's a weird interlude where Maury arranges for Thaniel to get a job offer to play the piano in the new Gilbert and Sullivan production, The Mikado. I always find it strange when real historical figures appear as characters in fiction, especially fiction with fantastical elements. Then we get another flashback to Japan that puts Maury in company with nationalists and suggests he might sympathise with them, casting doubt on his innocence. It feels a bit late in the day to do this without any other hints of it before now, though. It also narrates the incident that allowed Ito, the government official Maury used to work for, to discover Maury's ability. There's an interesting line when Ito thinks about how easy it would have been to keep dismissing Maury's frequent accurate predictions. He need only have decided, as he often did, that like gravity and wives, Maury was one of those things best trusted and not over-scrutinised. Maury and Ito don't part friends, even though, or rather in some ways because, Ito finds out Maury has saved him from multiple assassination attempts, which is a bit of a shame. Then we jump to a few days before Thaniel and Grace's wedding without any update on the investigation into the bombings. Maury has been cleared, so it has no further bearing on the story, I suppose. Grace demonstrates that she is petty, selfish and quite heartless, which is also a shame. But while trying to turn Thaniel against Maury, she does point out that he knew about the Scotland Yard bomb and only warned Thaniel rather than trying to stop it going off altogether. I'm surprised when the wedding goes ahead because I was expecting it to be cancelled for some reason, since a marriage of convenience between the two protagonists isn't a usual way to end a book. Thaniel smuggles tea into the wedding reception because he doesn't like champagne, which leads to the first affectionate moment between him and Grace. Then Grace tries very awkwardly to come on to Thaniel in the hotel suite on their wedding night, and Thaniel physically recoils from her kissing him. It could just be Victorian politeness and the difference in their stations, but it could also be a suggestion that he's gay. I did get that impression very slightly near the start, but it wasn't developed at all until now. And then Thaniel sneaks out of the hotel, goes back to Maury's house, and they kiss. Even given the earlier hints and my own preference for queer representation in stories, I was completely gobsmacked by this, because it feels like it comes totally out of nowhere. So I'm not sure I'm even on board with it, since there's been no apparent foundation laid for it. The same can be said for Matsumoto, Grace's friend, from college, clearly being upset by the wedding and withdrawing from Grace as a result. I got a smidgen of a hint that he was in love with her, and possibly even her also with him, but there's not enough in the narrative to make their separation emotive. It's understandable in the setting and circumstances that feelings would go unspoken between people who know they can't be openly together, but there are plenty of ways to convey them to the reader that would make the reading journey more intense and emotional. It feels like the book has turned into a completely different story with the time jump to the wedding. Suddenly it's about desire and fear of abandonment on multiple sides, and the interrelationships have become a lot more intense. Grace doesn't deal very well with Thaniel going to Maury on their wedding night, trying too hard to hold on to Thaniel when their arrangement is supposed to be entirely related to the house and the money. Again, there hasn't been any lead up to her actually wanting a relationship with him, which makes the change in her attitude hard to credit. With well over an hour left of the audiobook, I have no idea where this is going. Then Grace goes missing and Williamson puts Thaniel under house arrest. But he waits an entire day before sneaking out, and instead of going to look for her, he goes to play the piano in the opening performance of The Mikado. Thaniel saves Ito from yet another assassination attempt and decides that was the only reason Maury saved him from the bomb, which is a little bleak. Thaniel and Maury then save Grace and lots of other people from another bomb. But as with all the other aspects of the novel, there's very little build-up and everything is resolved very quickly without any terrible consequences, so it all feels very lacking in tension. It only just occurs to me at this point that the reason Maury's clockwork is so advanced is because he has knowledge from the future. I am very slow. Then we get a flashback following Grace as she uses coin tosses to implement her plan to set the bomb, making random choices so Maury can't predict what she's doing. She tells Thaniel she only wanted to create a dangerous situation where she might have been hurt and Maury didn't save her, so Thaniel will turn against him and ask him to leave them alone. Which is pretty appalling since Maury has never actually done anything to try and take Thaniel away from Grace. All he does even after the bomb is warn Thaniel that Grace will diminish him if he lets her, though I guess he doesn't actually know she set the bomb because Thaniel doesn't tell him. But things fall apart between Thaniel and Grace because he can't forgive her for setting the bomb in the first place, so she loses him only because of the action she takes to try and prevent that from happening, which is poetic justice of a sort. He agrees to sign the house over to her though, so she can continue with what she originally thought she wanted, science. But there's no discussion about whether or not there's still going to be money coming his way to send his nephews to private school, which is why he agreed to the marriage in the first place. Maury has lots of money though, so perhaps he's going to pay for that, but it's left unresolved. Thaniel asks Maury about his motives, and Maury says he came to London to find Thaniel, not specifically to set in motion the events to save Ito. But then he ruins it by saying, "I worked for Ito while I waited for you to grow up," which just makes it seem creepy. Then Thaniel gets a vision of the future for a change, seeing himself sad and alone in his 50s after Maury dies because of the age difference, which is a pretty tragic way to present a burgeoning romance in a story. One of the drawbacks of Maury's abilities is pointed out very near the end. It says books are boring because he can remember having finished them in the near future. What a horrible thought! But there are lingering effects of his head injury from falling off the building when Grace's bomb went off. He forgets things now, which makes him uncertain and much less confident than before. It's a sad change to his character, but it does even up the power dynamics between him and Thaniel a little bit, since he's also more dependent on Thaniel than before. Thaniel's association with Maury costs him quite a lot, though I guess he gains quite a lot too, and dissolving the marriage of convenience is probably a good thing. One of Maury's likely probabilities was that Thaniel would end up happy with Grace and that they would have a child together, which I suppose is a clever way for the author to set up the reader's expectations and then subvert them, but it's rather clumsily done, given considering how little setup there is for what actually happens. Then, in the last few minutes, Thaniel gets the watchmaker Williamson was using to help with the investigation to confess to having set all the other bombs and tried to frame Maury, and so the other part of the story, which hasn't been mentioned for ages, is suddenly all wrapped up yet again with incredible ease. I like the fact that Thaniel's friendship with Williamson is repaired before the end, though I'm not sure he should have revealed Maury's secret to a member of Scotland Yard without checking with Maury first. Though I guess it was the only way to assuage Williamson's last vestiges of suspicion against Maury. There's intermittently been a character called Six, a young girl from the workhouse who helps Maury in his workshop sometimes. It's sweet that Thaniel decides they should adopt her, but it's yet another thing that comes rather out of nowhere and ties things up a bit too neatly. I do love it though that when Thaniel says Maury must have known what he was going to say, his response is, "I hardly ever know what you're going to say, you change your mind too often." I really have no idea why Thaniel invites Grace to the medal ceremony at the end, though I suppose it would be odd if she just disappeared from the narrative. It seems equally odd to give the end of the story to pairing off Grace and Matsumoto though, but it is satisfying that Maury demonstrates he's orchestrated it, given they're partially united by their dislike of him. And I guess the reason Grace is invited is so this meeting with Matsumoto can take place, though her feelings don't track with her apparently having fallen in love with Thaniel along the way. It also seems very charitable of both Thaniel and Maury to go out of their way to provide her with a happy ending, given what she's done to both of them throughout the book. In terms of diversity, Thaniel's a northerner, if that counts. Maury, the titular watchmaker, is Japanese, as is Grace's friend Matsumoto. Fanshawe, who works at the Foreign Office, talks about his own mental health struggles and OCD in his family, and Williamson has a stutter, though I only knew that from it being mentioned in the narrative because it wasn't really evident in his dialogue. There are possible hints of queerness early on for Thaniel, Maury and Williamson, but they're so subtle I thought it was just wishful thinking on my part. So Thaniel going back to Maury's house on his wedding night and kissing him came almost out of nowhere. And Maury advises Williamson to take a trip to the seaside for his health, and also so he can meet a nice woman on the train. So I was wrong about him, at least, unless he's bisexual. There's misogyny and racism that's appropriate for the 1880s UK setting, and neither Thaniel nor Grace are free from thinking some rather problematic things, but they both end up with Japanese romantic partners in the end. Matsumoto says all English people are ugly, and Maury says he has no time for women's suffrage because it won't be possible for a very long time, so protesting now is pointless. Grace defies society's rules every turn, though she's the only female character with any significant page time, and that's only in the second half. So it's a bit disappointing that the only main female character in the book turns out to be unsympathetic. She says to Matsumoto right at the end that she's done some terrible things, perhaps suggesting that she does feel remorse, but it's too little too late for me, and I certainly can't forgive her for destroying Katsu the octopus. Overall thoughts. It's an interesting story with great characters and an immersive setting, but it's a bit difficult to get a hold of, and it's a shame that I initially loved all three of the main characters but ended up liking them all less as the book went on. There are some unpleasant aspects, but generally, even given the plot thread about the bombings and it turning out that the titular character is a multiple murderer, it feels like it fits into the cosy category. I enjoyed it overall, but it's quite confusing in some ways and doesn't really hold together that well as a cohesive narrative. I know there's a sequel because discovering that was what made me put this book on the Reviews Revisited list in the first place, but I have no idea what it might be about, and I'm not even sure I'm invested enough in this world to want to read it. It's on my audiobook wishlist, so I guess I'll see if I'm inspired to add it to my library at any point before I forget everything about this book again, because I certainly didn't remember most of the plot throughout the reread. Looking back to my original review, it turns out it was in September 2017, so I was right about that at least. Here's what I thought the first time around. I went to an author event recently at the Bloomsbury Institute where Natasha Pulley did a Q&A. I liked her a lot, and I remembered seeing the posters for her award-winning first novel, The Watchmaker of Filigree Street, when it came out, so I decided to give it a try. I went with the audiobook version and was glad I did because the narrator had a lovely voice and presented the different characters with enough distinction to make them memorable but not so much as to make them caricatures. I quite enjoyed the book overall. I liked the two main male characters, Thaniel Stapleton and Kate Amori, a great deal and found spending time with them very pleasant. That feels like faint praise, since pleasant is the best word I can find to describe this book, but I don't mind a gentle approach to storytelling on occasion. What confused me were the accolades the book has garnered, since it did have several faults and certainly didn't conform to the so-called rules of good novel writing, or stand out to me as worthy of particular praise. My main criticisms would be that the only main female character, Grace Carrow, wasn't very likeable and in fact was pretty awful to Thaniel throughout, making her distinctly unsympathetic. The plot felt quite fractured, which didn't surprise me as Pulley admitted it was originally built from three short stories, and there were multiple occasions in every chapter where the narrative used he and I didn't know who it was referring to. In terms of breaking the rules, the whole of the first few pages was about a low-level civil servant making a cup of tea, which I loved but didn't exactly start with a bang, and the protagonist had almost no agency at all, which was kind of the point and also didn't bother me. There was very little conflict, though the tug of war between Maury and Grace over Thaniel was quietly engaging, and the mystery of the bomb maker was almost incidental and impossible for the readers to solve. I've read reviews that describe the book as elegant, which is a good word for it. It's quite an unassuming book, but with lots of rich setting detail, and I did feel invested in the characters. So I'm a bit conflicted about this one. From an enjoyment point of view, it definitely falls on the positive side, but I'm finding it very difficult not to be analytical in my reading at the moment, and there was a lot about this one that brought me out of the listening experience to think about the writing. So, pretty much exactly the same as this time around. Hurrah! And wow, yes, my difficulties with not being analytical with my reading have definitely not gone away in the last 8 years. In fact, now that I'm a professional book editor and have a book club and a media reviews podcast, I would say it's a lot worse. But hey, all of those things were also tremendously fun, so I'm not complaining. Anyway, that's it for this episode of Reviews Revisited. Next month, I'm going to be revisiting Shrines of Gaiety by Kate Atkinson. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell me about a time you revisited some media and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email me at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Lastly, please join us for the next main episode of Will You Still Love It tomorrow in 2 weeks to hear what happens when I get Dave to watch the 1987 Barbara Cartland adaptation A Hazard of Hearts. Will he like it at all? And will I still love it after our discussion? I'm looking forward to finding out. Bye for now.